There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Ramadan Kareem from Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is the Business Breakfast Nightcap with Brandy Scott.
It's a very different Business Breakfast Nightcap this evening. Tonight, we're going to be lifting the tablecloth on the restaurant industry. All this week, I'm going to have a special guest that I have to admit, I have chosen each one entirely out of self-interest. I have just picked industries that I wanted to know a little bit more about, things that I was interested in, and we all know I like a bit of dinner. And I've invited someone in who can tell me a little bit more about how they actually work. So my guest this evening is the award-winning food writer and the founder of Foodiva, the impartial restaurant review website. She's also a curator of Dine Around and Chef Dinner Experiences, where she takes people around Dubai and introduces them to restaurants in new and exciting ways. Welcome to the studio this evening, Samantha Wood.
Good evening, Brandy. Thanks for having me on.
It's lovely to have you here. And I actually want to get started before we talk about the restaurant industry and what goes on behind those swinging doors and a little bit about the ins and outs of the social media industry as well. I want to talk about you first, because a lot of people want to get to the position that you are in, where you have a successful business that you have forged online, you've given up the day job, you've become an authority in your own sphere. For a lot of people at the moment, that is the Dubai dream. So let's rewind to when you started, because when I first met you, you were working in hotel PR.
Yeah, that's correct. I've been here 20 years, Brandy, probably as long as you.
When did you come?
August 1999, actually, so coming up to 20 years.
That is freaky. I came in the summer of 99 as well. I couldn't tell you what month, but it sounds like that was pretty similar.
Yeah, so I moved here from London, where I was working in fashion PR, actually. I'm half Greek Cypriot, half British, and grew up in Cyprus to parents that were hoteliers. So a good dining experience was engraved in me right from the beginning. And when I moved here, I had had enough of fashion PR and I wanted to try a different industry. So I started working in hospitality PR. I worked for a couple of PR agencies working on hospitality accounts. And then I joined Hilton and I looked after their corporate communications in the region. And then in 2010, I left without a job to go to. So I took a bit of a risk there, but I just had enough of working for the corporate world, wanted to do my own thing, but wasn't quite sure what that was going to be.
So you left before you knew what you wanted
to do. I mean, a lot of people look back and say, I'm sure you had this plan, Samantha. I mean, I'm a big planner, mega organizer. But actually, I didn't. And it was the first time I gave up a well-paid job, lots of nice perks, quite stressful though, I have to say, to do something that I didn't know what I was going to end up doing. But I had faith in that I would jump into something. I had a few ideas, but what happened was I traveled for a little bit. I gave myself a year to figure out because I did want to do some travel. Wasn't quite sure whether I wanted to stay in Dubai as well. It was one of those questions as well. But I sort of came back, realized I wanted to stay in Dubai, wanted to continue to make it my home. And I'd always harbored this idea of being a food critic, but I never wanted to work for someone else here because I knew my honesty would be compromised. So I had my mentor, still very much my mentor, an ex-boss of mine. She suggested, she said, well, why don't you see what they're doing in the US, see what's happening in the UAE and do your own thing. So from that, Foodiva was born, essentially. Very organic at the time. And the food reviewing scene at the time was very different to what it is now.
Different how?
Well, different in the sense that at the time you only really had Time Out to an extent. And then a little bit from The National, I guess, when it came to restaurant reviews that were impartial. But that was about it. We didn't have this whole social media and food blogging scene that exists now.
So what was actually involved in setting up from a technical point of view and from a cost point of view? What did you have to do?
Well, I had a business plan right from the beginning. For me, this had to make money. This wasn't just going to be a passion. It had to pay the bills, and I did want this to grow. So the biggest costs, I think, very much trade license, setting up the website, and time. Time is a huge cost. Creating all that content took a lot of time to sort of get that off the ground. As I said, it was organic. So it wasn't a case of, okay, I'm launching today. The content built up over time.
And one of the things that you have done from the start is you've had quite a strong policy about paying your way and going anonymous. Yeah. No special favours.
Yes. I mean, that was crucial for me. So I have this incognito no freebies policy. So any restaurant review that runs on my site abides by that, whether that's myself or my guest reviewers. So a few years into Foodiva, I did decide to take on a bank of guest reviewers for a couple of reasons. One, I was being recognized, and B, there were just too many restaurant openings to keep up with. So even if I did want to eat out every night, which I certainly don't want to, I wouldn't be able to keep up with it. Yeah.
Do you still think you get away with being anonymous? I've gone out for dinner before with Jay Rayner of The Guardian.
Yes, yeah, I know.
And he told me that very often there'll be pictures of him in the kitchen.
There are a few places here that have cottoned on to that, but you'd be surprised. More often than not, I'm not recognised.
Wigs?
Not yet. My hair has changed over the years, that's for sure. I might go down that route. I don't know. But it's surprising, actually. You would think that restaurants would have photos behind in the heart of house, really. But not many do. So unless the chef or the restaurant manager is aware of me, the rest of the team isn't necessarily briefed.
Can you tell when they spot you? Yeah. Is there suddenly like seven waiters and people are coming out with amuse-bouche?
Instantaneously, pretty much. You'd be surprised. Yeah, there's a mixture. Sometimes, yes, they just get really nervous. And then the restaurant, it may be the restaurant manager who spotted me or the chef that spotted me if it's an open plan kitchen or they've come out. Or it might be someone else that spotted me and then it's relayed to them and then you start to get extra dishes coming out. So sometimes it helps the experience, but sometimes it hinders it because it just becomes too precious and they become too fussy.
You said that from the start this had to make money.
Yeah.
How does it make money?
Different ways. So traditionally through advertising, sponsorship, competitions, and also through dine around experiences, the chef experiences that I run. And then the other arm to it is freelance writing as well as consultancy, PR and digital consultancy in the F&B field.
How do you make sure that one doesn't compromise the other? That if you are advising a restaurant and then you're reviewing one of their competitors, say, that that's not an issue?
Sure. That's a good question, actually. Because firstly, I will only take on restaurants or hospitality clients that are not focused on new openings. So Foodiva is very much focused. The reviews are all new openings. I would not take that on as a client.
So you only establish clients?
Only established, yeah.
How do you make sure that the perception then doesn't get muddied? Because it's one thing to know what you're doing, but in the wider world, you know what Dubai's like.
Sure.
People love to talk.
Well, I have for my consultancy arm, I actually have a separate company set up called Consult Diva. It's not something I've shouted about, but it does exist there. So there's very sort of clear lines that define what happens under Foodiva and what happens under Consult Diva. And I'm always very careful that anything that I take on from a consultancy basis is a project that I'm very passionate about and I love. And most of it comes to me because these are establishments where I'm actually a regular guest, a paying guest there, and I spend so much time there because I love it that they say, well, actually, can you come and work for us?
There are restaurants I spend a lot of time in and I think that, yes, they should start paying me for just the sheer amount that I'm putting through the till as well. What have you learnt along the way about what to do right and what you wouldn't do again?
You know, there's lots of challenges in setting up a business. I think, firstly, my biggest challenge is the fact that the technology and the digital scene changes constantly and has changed so much over the last 8 years. So I have to spend a lot of time reading up, keeping up with the latest trends, or working with consultants that advise me on that, because there's certain elements that are not my strengths. So that, I think, is the biggest challenge, that I've picked a field that is constantly changing and is still changing. And we could sit here 6 months' time and that's completely changed as well. So that's definitely been my biggest challenge, really. And setting up here, and yes, Dubai is very supportive of entrepreneurs, but there is a cost attached to it as well. I'm very lucky that I've picked an industry where those costs, as an online business, it's relatively minimal, so I can keep those costs down. But yes, there's still costs involved.
What advice would you give anyone who is looking to start up an online business today?
I'd say definitely have a business plan, but don't just have a business plan and don't look at it. Go back to it every 3 months at least. If you can't do it every 3 months, make sure it's at least every 6 months. Yeah.
Do you rejig yours? Do you change yours as you go along?
Definitely. I have an annual sort of review process where I do rejig it. And that, for instance, when I added the dinners and the dine around experiences, that was a conscious element to grow that business and to find other ways to monetize it. And also the other thing that's crucial, especially if you're looking at restaurant reviewing or food blogging, it depends. If you're doing it for a passion, and just a hobby, that's fine. There's no business element involved. But if you want to make money out of it, find a way, a creative way to monetize it. Because otherwise, you'll end up just going out eating amazing meals or not so amazing meals and not making much money.
How do you stop it being fattening?
Oh, it's hard work, Brandy. I have a personal trainer. I'm very healthy at home. And, you know, when you go out, don't eat the whole bread basket. Just try the bread a little bit, but then leave it or send it back.
We are speaking to Samantha Wood, the award-winning food writer and founder of Food Diva, in just a few moments on the Business Breakfast Nightcap. We're going to find out what happens when someone doesn't like your review.
Ramadan Kareem from Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is the Business Breakfast Nightcap with Brandy Scott,
where we are lifting the tablecloth on the restaurant industry this evening. My guest is the award-winning food writer and founder of Food Diva, Samantha Wood. We're going to hear more from her in just a minute. But before we do, I've been having a catch-up with Serena Kelly, getting her to shed a little bit of light on today's top news stories.
A fire broke out earlier on today at the Abu Bakr al-Sadiq metro station in Deira. So according to Dubai Civil Defence, it was three cars parked in the area that caught fire, and then that spread to nearby warehouses.
Which sounds like it could be a bad thing.
Yes, but they got it under control. So cooling operations are coming to an end now. But so that was basically this afternoon. It was kind of all kicked off. No injuries reported. So always definitely a good thing. Emergency services were on the scene and took care of everything fairly quickly.
So that was the fire in Deira, but we didn't have explosions in Fujairah.
This is correct. Okay, so this one's a little bit odd because if you happen to have heard about loud explosions being reported in Fujairah Port, it is definitely just a rumour. The Emirates media office released a statement earlier on today just saying that the port is running as normal. There were no explosions.
Why did people think there were?
Because media outlets, international media outlets, were running the story saying that explosions had been heard in Fujairah Port. And of course, they were saying, well, no, everything's actually fine.
Speaking of things that aren't true, talk to me about Ramadan scams.
I think most people would be familiar with these things that go on. They're kind of rearing their ugly head again. The ARN News Centre spoke to a young lady who actually had an encounter in Dubai Internet City. She got approached by a man saying that he'd run out of petrol, needed to get back home, and did she have any spare cash so that he could go and get petrol to return home. And in his case, it was back to Saudi Arabia.
I've had people ask me before for money to get back to Oman, so
exactly.
I know of what you speak.
So it's more or less, you know, the authorities are kind of saying, look, everybody, you know, unfortunately, being the holy month of Ramadan, people are going to come out of the woodworks and prey on people's generosity and stuff. So
is the idea that because it is a month of giving, they think that people will be more likely to give without question?
Yes, it is the month of giving, and you're going to be thinking about others and how you can help them. So, yeah, the likelihood of somebody actually saying, oh, well, here's a couple of hundred dirhams, hope you get back to your family. You just need to hear somebody give you a heart-wrenching sob story. And most of the time, you know, they are. And they're just very clever and just not nice people. So the authorities are like, please don't let people take advantage of you during this holy month. Just be careful about it and go through the right channels. Go, if you want to, you know, give zakat or something to charity or give back to the community, go through the authorized channels. Go through the charities that, you know, things that are verified, that you know that it's actually going to get to the people that need it.
Let's finish off by having a little chat about something that's going to happen tonight, something fantastically huge in the world of the entertainment, not the Business Breakfast Nightcap.
Ah! Which I love, by the way.
Quite frankly, is award-winning. But the BAFTAs, speaking of.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so 11 o'clock our time tonight. From what I gather, Killing Eve, 14 nominations. Like, it's just... Have you seen the show?
Do you know, I have not seen it. This is the Sandra Oh one, though. And Grey's Anatomy.
Yep.
Always makes me cry. One of my favourite TV series. She's
yes.
brilliant in Grey's Anatomy.
Yep.
But this is supposed to be...
I've seen season one. I loved it because it's... If you're into serial killer meets hitman or hitwoman, I should say in this case, and FBI undertow investigations, that type of thing. Yeah, so Sandra Oh's character's tracking down this female serial killer. And I'm not going to give anything away because what I'm saying isn't going to give anything away, but you'll be hooked from the very first episode and it's phenomenal. And I believe it is sort of in contention. It's facing off with The Bodyguard.
Which is my pick. I love a political drama.
Yeah.
I get very... Yeah, I get into the intrigue, I get into the double dealing, I like a bit of a caper. So I'm backing The Bodyguard, but I think that Killing Eve is pretty much everyone's favourite, yeah. And it's certainly up for the most awards.
It's going to kind of, I think, I have a feeling it might wipe the event, really.
And she means wipe out everyone, I think, not actually take it out like a tidal wave. That is Serena Kelly from the ARN News team. You're going to be watching the BAFTAs tonight, Samantha Wood, or not? 11 o'clock?
I actually didn't know they were on.
You're not a big TV person.
Oh, I tend to read books, yours included.
I will take yeah. that as an answer. I will take that as an answer. I'm talking to Sam Wood this evening, the award-winning food writer, the founder of Food Diva, the impartial restaurant review website. We're talking about restaurant reviewing. What actually happens when you go out to review a restaurant, Sam? What are you looking for?
Oh, lots of different things. I actually have 2-page guidelines, which is what I also brief into my guest reviewers, because we always have to make sure that whether it's myself that's reviewing or a guest reviewer, we're all looking for the same things. So licensed restaurants are scored on a 1 to 5 knife rating, and that will cover 6 parameters. So you've got food, and that will be anything from sort of flavor, technique, quality of ingredients, presentation. You then have service, location, interior, atmosphere, and value for money. So it's everything from making the call or the online booking right through to walking out at the end of the restaurant. We're looking at every single element. 1,000 words, because people don't have the capacity to read much more than that. It's quite detailed. There's a whole process that goes behind it. I mean, essentially, to get one review up is a day and a half work, and that's without dining out.
And not all of them are positive. Now, you were involved in a very public disagreement with a very high-profile chef at the end of last year. How often do people react to the reviews you write?
Well, it's funny timing-wise, actually, because I just went live last week with a licensed restaurant review of an imported concept, a big name chef that's opened in a 5-star hotel here. And it wasn't overtly positive. It was mainly the service that was shambolic. But what was interesting was within half an hour of that review going live, this chef, not the chef of the restaurant here, the chef.
The international.
The international, yeah, chef. responded privately, taking that feedback on board constructively. Now, that happened in the high profile case you mentioned last year as well, initially, but then the discussion changed from then on. But some cases, restaurants do take it on board. Others, they just ignore it. It's really interesting. And there's no particular pattern to it. I think just some restaurants are more switched on with monitoring social media and reading reviews. You tend to see it when they are homegrown concepts. Concepts developed here locally by restaurateurs here, they tend to be more responsive than the big name chefs.
Has anyone ever asked you to change what you've written?
I've never been asked to change what I've written, and I would never, ever do that. I have been asked to go back and re-review, but my policy is that's not possible. There's just too many new restaurant openings to keep up with. And obviously, if I go back and re-review one, I have to do it with every single restaurant as well. So
I'm a bit of a people pleaser. I like being nice to people. I don't like people not to like me.
Yeah. You know, I didn't go into this business to be liked. Even though I have made a lot of friends from chefs and restaurateurs, and I absolutely love this industry. But when you go into something like this, where you know that you're going to be writing negatively. Now, having said that, I say negative, it's always constructive. So if I don't like something, you have to say why. Explain. It's not, and if it's just personal dislike of something, then you have to make that clear. So it's fair enough. I understand it if some chefs or some restaurateurs don't like it or don't take fondly to it. That's fine. That's part and parcel of what I do.
But it doesn't keep you up at night.
No, what would keep me up at night is not being honest. Now, some people would argue the reverse, but I can only sleep well knowing I've told an honest story.
I'm speaking to Sam Wood, the food writer and founder of Foodiva. When we listen to her again in just a few minutes, when we come back from the news, we're going to have a look at the big Michelin star debate. Is it really coming to Dubai, and would it be good for us? I suspect that Sam knows a little bit more than your average person on the street. We're going to hear about that in just a moment.
Ramadan Kareem from Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is the Business Breakfast Nightcap with Brandy Scott.
We're on the Business Breakfast Nightcap. I'm lifting the napkin on the restaurant industry. I have Samantha Wood, otherwise known as Foodiva, the award-winning food writer and impartial restaurant reviewer. Thanks very much for staying with me, Sam. It's lovely to have you in the studio.
It's lovely to be here at nighttime, actually.
I'm quite liking being here at nighttime as well. Because it means that I wasn't here first thing in the morning, which is quite frankly quite glorious. Richard and Malcolm are going to have to fight me to get me out of the seat in the evening. We're taking turns all through Ramadan. This is a special Ramadan Business Breakfast Nightcap that will be happening. Let's have a chat about the bigger picture. What's happening in the restaurant industry here in Dubai? Let's kick off with the Michelin star debate that has been raging for some time. Will Dubai get Michelin stars? Are we ready for Michelin stars? Do we really want Michelin stars? It's been raging for some time, and not a star in sight.
No. I think it will come here eventually. Personally, I think I don't think Dubai is ready for it. There aren't enough Michelin caliber restaurants here. Definitely no 3 or 2 star. There might be the odd 1 star. So I would struggle. I struggle to see how they will pull together a guide just for Dubai. But I'm sure it will come eventually. It could be a good thing because I think it will help raise standards. There'll be competition between restaurants as to why they did or didn't get into it. So I think it will certainly help raise standards. But I think it's important to remember that with 1 and 2 star Michelin restaurants, they're only really looking at the food. It's only when it comes to 3 star that they're looking at service, atmosphere, the whole experience.
There's no shortage of restaurants here, though, that will claim to have a Michelin chef. And I know that's one of your
pet peeves.
Particular. Yes.
There's no such thing as a Michelin chef, as I wrote a couple of summers ago, I think. The Michelin attributes the stars to restaurants. So a chef can leave a restaurant, but they cannot take that star with them. The star remains with that restaurant.
So no one's actually got a Michelin-starred chef here in Dubai, even though they say they do?
Even though they say it, and a lot of PRs use it in marketing, there is no such thing. I think Michelin obviously has taken the stance that, we still get the word out. But strictly speaking, that is not correct.
Do we want Michelin stars? I mean, would it... There's a question about whether they place too much pressure on chefs. We've seen some tragic consequences to that. We've seen restaurants in Europe choose to turn down the stars or sort of give them back. Because they say it can be crushing.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, there's certainly pressure that adds to it. So again, it's back down to the restaurants. I mean, if when Michelin comes here and it rates a number of restaurants with a one star, let's also remember they have the Bib Gourmand as well, which is...
I have no idea what you just said.
So as part of the overall Michelin guide, it's not just Michelin rated restaurants. They have another rating system, which is more for sort of bistros, brasserie, more sort of casual concepts. And it's called Bib Gourmand. So you could have a number of those. But obviously, if they're going to launch a guide here, they need to have a certain number of Michelin starred restaurants. But yes, and I guess once they first come here and they launch the first guide and a number of restaurants are rated with that, that automatically puts pressure on them to retain those stars or that particular accolade and even to grow it. So it's up to that restaurant to really rise to it. But yes, of course, it puts pressure on. But it may be pressure in a good way in terms of making sure that there's consistency, because I think that's one of the weakest links here in Dubai's restaurant scene, is that you and I could go into the same restaurant the same night and have a completely different experience. Not just food, but service. I think service is a little bit weaker here generally overall. Not many restaurants get the service right.
Why would we have that different experience, though?
Because you're being looked after by different people in that restaurant. Or someone, you might be recognised, I might be recognised. That elevates, can elevate an experience as well. And also you go in the week. I mean, I see that with my reviews. I mean, like with any review that goes out there, there's going to be people that agree and disagree. Some people might say, oh, but I've had a different experience. I went there. Other people might say, well, I had exactly the same experience. So it's that lack of consistency, which goes back to the training and the systems that are in place for that.
Do we have too many restaurants, full stop?
We certainly do. We've got 11,000 restaurants here. And in terms of comparison, we have more restaurants per capita per million residents than New York, London, Singapore. Only Paris has more than us. And if you take into account overnight visitors, London moves above Dubai. But yeah, we've got way too many restaurants here. There's just too much. I mean, I work in this industry and I struggle to keep up with the existing restaurants and the new openings, let alone someone that is just at home and wants to go out at the weekend and is thinking of where to go.
According to DED figures, Department of Economic Development, 1,100 restaurants were licensed last year.
Yeah.
And the statistic that actually got me was 10% more restaurants in 2018 than it was in 2017. Yeah. And I wouldn't have thought that 2018 would have been the year that you thought, do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go and open a restaurant.
Yeah. But there were also a lot of closures as well. Yeah. And interestingly, I did a study on the reviews that I have on my site over the last 8 years to see how many of those, bearing in mind I only run new openings, how many of those are still operational? What percentage do you think?
Of
all the openings have closed down? 26%, actually, which isn't...
It's a quarter.
Yeah. But it's on a par with other major cities.
Do we need regulation Do we need there to be a certain number of licenses issued a year or tougher criteria? Come in and show me your business plan. I don't know how they would manage it, but do we need a way that authorities are managing the situation, or do we just leave it to natural selection?
Yeah, no, I do. I do think there needs to be some kind of pre-selection process. There are too many restaurants that are passion projects here. With no business plan, no market research. Why do we have so many Italian restaurants in Dubai? Dubai is the only city in the world, maybe Singapore a little bit, that you can get every cuisine under the sun, but you'd struggle to get cuisine from this country. So when you think about where to dine out, Emirati cuisine is not top of mind. Middle Eastern is to an extent, but not when it comes to licensed.
Profitability, we know, has been tough for restaurants in the last couple of years, particularly. Margins have been slashed around the place. Do you feel it when you're reviewing? Do you see it? Do you think people are trying to save money here?
There's a lot of upselling that goes on. So, yes, you can see that they're trying to sell you more dishes, especially when it comes to sharing concepts, or more expensive dishes with more pricier ingredients. And yes, there is an element, of course, especially now coming into Ramadan in the summer. So restaurants may not need to be staffed as highly as they are now over the summer, because there aren't as many people going out to eat.
Are you hearing about layoffs? Are you hearing about people not being paid?
No. No, but I'm sure it's happening. Now, I think what's challenging is that you also have all these different micro districts that are mushrooming in Dubai. So it's not just the established destinations, and it's not just the licensed restaurants. You have a lot of cafes here that are opening up. And I think it's wonderful from the perspective that we're developing this real cafe culture here now. Whether you go to Jumeirah or to JLT or to the Palm. But again, a lot of these open up and they don't even last a year. So there needs to be some kind of system in place to monitor and to manage that, really.
I'm speaking to Samantha Wood, the award-winning food writer. Just a moment, we are going to be having a look at whether delivery services are the answer to all of this, whether they are the extra revenue stream that restaurants need, or whether they are the end of civilized dining as we know it. Just a minute.
Ramadan Kareem from Dubai Eye 103.8.
This is the Business Breakfast Nightcap with Brandy Scott,
where I'm speaking to the award-winning food writer and the founder of Foodiva, the impartial restaurant review website. Samantha Wood, thank you for staying with me.
Thank you.
We've had a number of people come in to tell us that they did not know that Michelin stars went to restaurants and not to the chefs. So there you go. Educational, this interview. We're very pleased to be with you live. We are going to be speaking to you all through Ramadan with a special guest each night, which is really rather fun. And what I have done is I've basically just invited people that I'm interested in their industry and I'm interested in what they do. So this week, I'm going to be speaking to Jasper Hope from the Dubai Opera solely because I want to convince him to put on some of my own favourite plays. I'm basically using this chair for my own nefarious purposes. But tonight we're talking about food. Delivery services. We've just been chatting about the number of closures in the restaurant industry. Are delivery services, the Zomatos, the Deliveroos, the Uber Eats, there are a bunch of them, are they the saviour of the industry or are they the worst thing to happen to it?
Well, it's a double-edged sword, Brandy. I think on one hand, obviously, they take a huge chunk of commission from these restaurants, especially when margins are already pretty tight, particularly when you're looking at the sort of small cafe operations as opposed to the bigger licensed restaurants. But at the same time, it also brings a new customer base to that restaurant that may not be aware of it. And it's a marketing tool as well.
Is it great for the people eating in the restaurants, though? I mean, the recent KPMG survey that we've been talking about this evening, a third of the operators told KPMG that more than a quarter of their revenue now came from delivery services. Mm. I've been sat in restaurants, one sushi restaurant I can think of, waiting for my food and watching the bags go out the door. I've interviewed the chef, Peter Gordon, before.
Yes.
Who does not, of the Sugar Club in London. Yeah. He's got a couple of restaurants around the world. He won't have them in his restaurant because he says he doesn't want people sitting there thinking that the motorcycle guy picking up the cool bag or the heated bag is being prioritised over their own meal. Other chefs have just said that, quite frankly, it looks a bit ugly.
I agree. I mean, I don't like it. I'm with you. I've been to many a cafe or a small joint where you see them sort of queuing up and clearly taking priority over your order when you're still waiting for your food. But I think with the more high-end restaurants, they're being more discreet about it, where these guys are located, how they're handing that food over. So there are ways to do it. But obviously, you need the space to do that. And the smaller operations, yes, struggle to hide it.
But the restaurants are being built differently now because of this. We're seeing less floor space. I mean, if you look around JLT, for example, a lot of the places in there'll be two or three tables. And I mean, effectively, they're delivery kitchens with a couple of tables.
But
you've got less staff as well, less wait staff.
Yeah, and you also have those operations, those so-called dark kitchens, where actually a restaurant doesn't even have a location, but they just have a space in a production unit where that food, and a production kitchen where that food is being produced. And something that I've actually have been quite vocal about recently again is the fact that as a consumer, when you're on that app and you're ordering, you don't know where that food is coming from. So if it's coming from a dark kitchen, you're not told that it's coming.
Sounds like the dark web.
Well, I know that's the word that it's that's being used for it. But essentially, it's a production kitchen. There's one in Barsha, there's one in Alcoz. So you don't know if the food is actually coming from one of these production kitchens or from an actual restaurant. And I think that's wrong. Because as in the industry, we know, people that work in the industry will know whether that particular concept is from a dark kitchen. But if not,
does it matter though? If my pizza turns up and the pizza's good, we're fine.
Well, I guess it goes back to provenance. Do you not want to know where your food comes from? Ultimately, it goes back to ingredients. Some people want to, other people may not. Yeah.
Do you know what? The thing that I feel it very much about the retail industry as well, is where we have wait staff who just aren't given the autonomy. We were talking a little while ago about service in restaurants and the fact that it can be inconsistent. You've got a couple of great people, you've got a couple of people aren't so great, and it comes down to the quality of the training. It's not the staff's fault, it's what's being put in for their training needs. And it's something that really gets me in retail as well, is that staff don't necessarily always have the autonomy to make decisions on the floor.
Yeah.
I was out with a very pregnant friend a wee while ago, and she wanted beans on toast. And they said, "We're really sorry, don't do beans on toast." And she's like, "But you've got beans, and you've got bread, and you've got a kitchen." And they were like, "We don't do beans on toast." So in the end, she ended up saying, "Can I have a side of beans?" And they were like, "Yes." And she was like, "Can I have some toast?" And they were like, "Yes." And she was like, "Fantastic."
Oh, you're kidding me.
That's and we made beans on toast. And it's quite an extreme example. And we were sitting there having a bit of a giggle about it, and that's all fine. But I do feel for the staff who don't have the flexibility to go off-piste.
But you're right. I mean, you nailed it on the head. They need to be empowered. And that's you see that with good restaurants. And again, I think when you go back to the homegrown concepts where the owners are operating those restaurants, the training tends to be better there because it's their personal project. But again, it comes from above. If the training's in place, and that training needs to include that empowerment to make decisions like that and to not have everything that is scripted. One other thing that's also key here is making sure that your staff are eating off that menu and are trying out those dishes, so that when someone goes, "Well, shall I order this or this?" they're speaking from the heart rather than from a script.
What you're talking about here, though, is you're also talking about having more expensive staff, aren't you? Because you're talking about bringing in a calibre of people who can make those decisions, who've got experience in the industry, who've got the confidence to do that.
And the personality as well. And that's one thing that's lacking here.
And you have to pay for it.
Yes.
Are we willing to pay for it?
Restaurant dining here is already expensive. So it's very tricky. It's going to be tough here. We're coming into a period now with Ramadan, the summer. It's already tough on restaurants. You can't really raise those costs because there are other costs that come into it. It's not just the food element as well. There are other elements that make that dining experience expensive. So restaurants are having to be more creative, but it's also support from the landlords as well in terms of rents. So there are lots of different reasons that make that particular restaurant sit at that particular price point.
We are, unfortunately, out of time. I've got a list of things I want to ask you about, but it's 2 minutes to nine and I have to head to the news with great regret. I've been speaking tonight to Sam Wood, the award-winning food writer, the founder of Food Diva. That is the impartial restaurant review website. Thank you very much for keeping me company tonight on the Business Breakfast Nightcap.
Thank you, Brandy.
I've really enjoyed your chat. If we missed any of that, it will be online. And of course, the guys will be back tomorrow morning with the Business Breakfast Live from 7 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcast at DubaiEye1038.com.